Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Clever Girls Know podcast. This is Bola Shokumbi. I'm the founder and CEO of Clever Girl Finance. The Clever Girls Know podcast is a podcast for women, offering a space for conversations around personal finance, business, life, and living. I'd love for you to subscribe to this podcast, and you can do that everywhere you listen to your podcast episodes. And if you love what you listen to, head on over to iTunes and leave a review so that other amazing women just like you can find this podcast as well. I'd also love for you to stop by clevergirlfinance.com. We have new content on the blog multiple times a week. We have over 30 plus free courses. Plus, when you sign up for a course, you can talk to a Clever Girl Finance mentor for free to get encouragement, motivation, or if you just want to have an open, no shame, no judgment girl talk. Finally, check out our YouTube channel. Just search Clever Girl Finance on YouTube. And if you don't already follow us on Instagram, you can find us at Clever Girl Finance. Okay, so let's get into today's episode. Hi, Gigi.
Hi, Bola. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome to the Clever Girls Know podcast. I am excited to have you here. We are going to be discussing how to navigate family dynamics and preparing for parental retirement, which is something that you're familiar with. And you just launched, or you're launching, a new book, which you're going to tell us about. But before we dive into the topic, please tell everybody who you are, what you do, and what your book is called.
Yeah, thanks, Bola. I really appreciate you having me on the show. My name is Giovanna Gonzalez, but a lot of people may know me as Gigi or the First Gen Mentor. I'm a former investment professional turned TikToker, financial educator, speaker, and now the author of the best-selling book, Cultura en Cash.
I love that. And congrats on your book again. So you did mention just now that you are a first gen Latina. And so I'd love for you to tell us about your personal journey as a first gen Latina, navigating the complexities of personal finance and family dynamics. What inspired you to write your book, Cultura en Cash? And what were some specific challenges you faced?
Yeah. So first, let me walk you a little bit through kind of my upbringing. So I am the proud daughter of Mexican immigrants. My parents immigrated to the United States in the 90s. And being that they were immigrants, they worked basically low-income jobs. We were a low-income family. We didn't have any money conversations growing up. There weren't any sort of teachings about what to do with money. The only narrative we heard about money was there's not enough of it, so don't bother asking us for it. So I learned that very quickly. And then, well, the other thing they instilled in me was the importance of education. They said, we came here to have you guys have a better opportunity at life, and you guys need to get college educated. They couldn't really give us guidance beyond that because they hadn't been to college themselves, but they just said, you have to get a college degree. So I followed their advice. I went to college. I majored in economics, and I got an office job. My first office job was working in auto insurance. I was a claims adjuster. And after some time, I switched over to investment management and investment consulting, where I spent the majority of my career. And this is my 20s. And what happened was, you know, I thought that I was going to be set up because I had done everything right. I had followed my parents' advice to go to school, get a good degree, get a good office job. I had checked all those boxes, but I still found myself struggling with money in my 20s. I had bad roommate situations that I couldn't escape from. I had bad workplaces that led to workplace burnout, and I had to take a medical leave. I was just stuck and trapped in a lot of bad situations that I couldn't escape from because I didn't have money. And that was so frustrating to me because I'm like, well, I did everything right. Why am I still struggling with money? And that's when I realized, oh, it's because I never learned how to manage my money. My parents never taught me that. And obviously the K-12 school system, and even in college as an econ major, nobody taught me personal finance. So that's when I decided, okay, I have to self-teach myself how this all works. I taught myself by reading a bunch of money books. Then I started cooking up my own financial plan of, okay, these are my financial goals. I want to get out of debt. I want to build savings. I want to be more aggressive with my investing. And when I tried to apply this new financial knowledge with my family, I actually experienced an extreme culture clash where my family was just like, this is not how we do things. Like, what is this? Like, this is how white people act. And I'm like, no, this is how people like that know about money act. And they're like, no, like, you know, and I now know as somebody with a lot of lived experience is that the white middle class money culture is very individualistic. You focus on your own finances. You don't really tell your money troubles to other people. Where with my Latina family, the first people that you go to when you have a money problem is your family. So you ask them for a loan or for some sort of financial support. So I really struggled in balancing, you know, working on my own a financial journey, but also having these expectations from family members expecting me to support them because I was seen as the one who had quote unquote made it because I had gone to college.
So what were there any specific things that they were like, oh, no, we don't do it like that, that your parents were like, challenge you against?
Yeah. So for example, somebody needed money for a surgery. They did not have health insurance. I had told this person to get health insurance because if something medical were to happen, it would be very expensive. This person did not listen to me. And sure enough, she needed an emergency surgery. It had to be done within a month. And it was going to cost $7,000 because she was going to get it done in Mexico. And she didn't have the money. She didn't have the savings because she's never been proactive with her finances. Mm-hmm. So then I was contacted and I was asked, hey, you know, I know you have a credit card, right? Like you have a couple credit cards and with probably big credit lines. Can you help me pay for this expense with your credit card? I'll pay you back. And I didn't feel good about it because me and this person had already had money problems in the past. So, but it was still important, right, that I try to support. So I was very, very conflicted about like, oh my God, this person needs the money for this surgery because it's an emergency. But also, what if this person doesn't pay me back? Like I already have $50,000 of debt of my own between my student loans and my car payment. And now I'm going to be adding $7,000 of debt for a surgery that's not even mine, right? If this person doesn't pay me back. Mm-hmm. And what I tried to implement was like a contract, a contract saying, hey, you know, I'm loaning you this money, but you're going to pay me back. And if you don't, then I will get the title to your car because it will be of equal value to the $7,000.
Did it work?
I thought it would be no. Oh, no. I thought it would be an even exchange, right? And again, as long as you pay me back, I don't get no car title. I just want the money to be paid back to my credit card because I don't have this money. And I was met with a lot of resistance, a lot of how dare you, like you don't put conditions on family when family mm-hmm. needs support. Never mind, I don't need your money. And all of a sudden they were able to tap into somebody else for money that same day.
Yeah.
And I was very much labeled as a black sheep, definitely for doing something like that. And you know, what's interesting is the person that did loan her money for the surgery, she actually did charge her interest for.
Oh, that's good then.
She charged her interest for the loan, but because I had a closer relationship to this family member, I was expected to do it with no strings attached.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that I found that very interesting. And, you know, I would say I can definitely relate to you in terms of like, you know, coming here as an immigrant, having your parents have a different cultural experience than the American way and mm-hmm. not being able to give you advice, but not being able to help you set up your finances because they just don't know. So my parents,
it's a different country. Yeah. You're Nigerian, right?
Yeah, I'm Nigerian. Yeah. My parents are, they're first generation college educated. So both of my parents went to college, went master's, PhDs, et cetera, all that stuff, but they were the first generation. And even with all that education coming to America, they couldn't help me with 401k or credit or because that was just not the way that things were set up where they came from. And we come from a very cash heavy society. You want to buy something, you save the money. You want to build a house, you save the money. It was very, very cash heavy because extension of loans cost a lot of money. I remember a time a cousin was telling me they had applied to get a loan for a car and the interest rate was 30%. And they couldn't believe how high the interest rate was. So I can get that. And I know there's a lot of cultures where it's your job, if you're making money, to bring your family along. My culture is somewhat like that. I know your culture is. And it's like, if you're earning money, then, you know, you're taking care of your parents, your siblings, you're helping some people help their siblings get through college. People help their parents pay their expenses. And it's sort of like expected, not necessarily demanded.
Yeah.
But sometimes you do it out of the goodness of your heart because that's how you're raised. You know, this is
You know, yeah. I want to help my parents. I want to help my siblings. This is how, this is part of your culture. You want to do it. But when it becomes like this forced obligation, mm-hmm. it can be challenging for you. So I can imagine when you presented that contract and they're like, how dare you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You must have felt exactly. some kind of way. But, you know, again, you're the first gen Latina here with your family. Now you're living in a different society. And even though you were raised by them, you're also raised with the perspective of the society that you live in. And you have your own debt that you were trying to pay down at the time. So that I find that dynamic very interesting. I know a lot of people who are listening to the podcast can relate to that feeling obligated to take care of your family. There's nothing wrong with it, right? You do what is best for you, what you feel mm-hmm. like you can accommodate. Everybody's situation is different, but also you need to have some sort of a boundaries. And that's my next question for you, right? So you had that relative approach you to pay for the surgery. You said no, you felt terrible. You were labeled as a black sheep, but mm-hmm. I'm sure you've had multiple instances of family or even friends reaching out to you for money because they know you're earning a good salary. You went to college, yeah. you got the job. How yeah. do you approach setting boundaries with your family members today? So let's say I'm your aunt and I come to you and I'm like, Gigi, mm-hmm. You know, I need to go on a trip. I need to go do something.
We don't have to make up a scenario because there's so many real scenarios that I can pull from.
Okay, give me a real scenario. How are you setting these boundaries?
Yeah. So for example, I was contacted. It's always, again, it's some sort of financial emergency related to medical. Mm. So yeah, my one of my grandmothers needed eye surgery and I was asked for $1,000 to help pay for this eye surgery. And of course I love my grandmother. Of course I know my grandmother doesn't have the money for it, but at the time I also knew that I was still building my savings. I still had debt, so I couldn't just gift $1,000 to my family, even though I wanted to. If I had the money, I would have done it. So instead, what I said is, hey, I cannot support you with $1,000, but I have $200 that I can mm-hmm. gift to you, you know, no strings attached, and the money won't set me back financially. Does that help? And sometimes people are more willing to be okay with that. If you just say, hey, like I have a lot going on myself financially, but I can support in this way. That's just one way. A different way, if you really yeah. do not have the financial means, is saying, hey, I am so sorry. Right now, money is strapped for me myself, so I cannot financially support you. But how about I help you with some internet research to figure out a way to get access to funding, or maybe start a GoFundMe account to help pay for those expenses, right? Or you can offer your time and, hey, I can't support you with money at this time, but I know it's a difficult time with the health issues. I can go to your week and clean your house, you know, to kind of get one thing off your plate. So it's still showing up for family and showing support during difficult times, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the first ask that they want, especially if it's going to be detrimental to your own financial progress.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that approach. And that's something that I tell people to do. It's something that I've done in the past where, okay, you come to me, you're asking me for $20,000. No, that's not going to happen. But guess what? I can give you, mm-hmm. I can give you X amount of money. And if you don't pay me back, it's fine. I won't lose sleep over it, you know, and I think mm-hmm. it's important to get clear on, especially when family and friends are asking you for money, right? They'll come up with numbers, they come to ask you, and sometimes they'll ask you because they really need it. Some people will ask you because they have nowhere else to get it, and you know this person, you know their character, you've helped them financially before and they've paid you back. And those people, you know, you give because you know that, you know, they're good for it. But I always say that if you're going to loan money to family and friends, the money mm-hmm. you give them, if you never get it back, be okay about it, because there will be mm-hmm. the family and friend who will come and promise you heaven and earth. Because some people, even though you know how to talk a good talk and be like, no, I only have 200, I only have 500. They know how to do the sales pitch, right? And they will mm-hmm. guilt you you into giving them the money. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it's difficult to say no. And so whatever you're giving, just make sure that if you don't get it back, you're okay mm-hmm. with it. But I love that you offer other alternatives. I don't have the money, but I can help you do this. I don't have all the money, but I can give you a portion. That is a mm-hmm. great way to just be honest. And sometimes yeah. I know people have difficulty having that conversation in person because it could be someone that they look up to or someone much older than them, or, you know, there's some different family dynamics sometimes. And so I always say, you know, just say, you know what, let me get back to you, and then call them or text them later. And say, yeah. oh, no, the conversation we had, it's because it's easier to text. I don't have the money, but I can help you do X, Y, Z, or I can give you this amount, not the whole amount. So don't, you know, don't feel pressured
Yes.
And don't allow people to overwhelm you with their own burdens, right? Again, we all want to have empathy to what everybody is going through. But like you said earlier, Gigi, you don't want it to be at the detriment of your own financial well-being, right? If yeah. you owe $50,000 in student loans, you don't have $10,000 to give somebody.
You just don't. But you know, the pressure and the guilt can feel real. And that's yes. something I see a lot with my community where they're like, I know that I'm in debt, but my parents sacrificed so much for me. So that's the least I could do. I don't care if it sets me back. And, you know, I tell them from my personal experience, if you keep doing that, if you keep setting yourself back, trying to support other people, eventually it's going to lead to resentment because you're going to see that you're not where you were supposed to be because you keep giving money that you don't have when you can't afford it. You know, so I say focus on yourself first, put your oxygen mask first, build mm-hmm. a solid financial foundation for you. And then once you're financially secure and you have a debt payoff plan and you have somewhat of savings, then you can be more generous and offer that support to family, but not when you're in the thick of it, of barely trying to figure out your own stuff out.
Exactly. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you're someone who is like, I have to help my family, I want to, I need to, you know, again, everybody's dynamic is different. I would say just build what you can afford into your budget. This way, you know, every month you're going to pay these bills, you're going to do this savings, you're going to pay this debt, et cetera, and you're going to give this to your family. That way it's not throwing you off. It's not derailing your financial plans and you're doing what you can afford. And you can tell them, listen, this is all I can give you every month, every 6 months, every quarter. Like communication is key, even though sometimes they may be mad at you. It's okay. And like you, Gigi, with your family member, they went, who needed the $7,000 for surgery, they went and mm-hmm. found an alternative. And guess what's going to happen quickly, when you say no? when you are adamant and you're no and you stand firm and you're no of this is what I can and cannot give, they will find alternatives. People always do. Think about the mm-hmm. times that you have needed money for something and you couldn't get it. Or, you know, whatever. Didn't you find a way?
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're resilient. We figure out a way. So resourceful.
So you are in this place where you're earning money, you're running a business, and your parents are in a place where they're preparing for retirement. And obviously there's the family dynamic of, you know, there's Gigi, she's doing great. You know, are you planning to support your parents in retirement? And how are you helping them prepare for their own retirement financially to ease the burden on yourself?
Yeah, I love this question. So my parents are divorced. They've been divorced for probably 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And I am estranged from my mother, unfortunately. We've been no contact for 2 years because she's physically abusive. So mm-hmm. regarding my mom, I don't have any plans to support her. I have two brothers. So hopefully mm-hmm. my two brothers are able to support her in that way. And then for my father, I'm really close to my dad. He's very supportive and has always been there for me when I've needed him. With him, I do have plans and I'm already planning for how I'm going to provide that aid when he needs it. Fortunately, he is somewhat a little bit set up. You know, he lives in Mexico. He inherited property from his father when my grandfather passed away. So he has a little real estate portfolio, right, that he collects income from. He has some cash flow there, but he doesn't have any investments besides the real estate, like the couple units that he has, right? He doesn't have any investments in the stock market because he doesn't trust the stock market. He doesn't understand it. I've tried to explain it to him. He doesn't care. So I know that he will probably end up, and his home is paid for. Again, he inherited from his dad. So, but I know what he will need help with medical care as he ages, as well as around the clock, like a home aid, right? Because he is single and I know I won't have the ability to have my dad move in with me. So I know that me and my husband will have to fork the money to help make sure that my dad has somebody with him when he's really, really old, right? He needs that support. So we're already saving money for that. We're putting it into an investment account. And I also talked to him about it, not as regularly as I would wish. I wish that every time we talked on the phone, he'd be open to the conversation, but he's much more open when I see him in person. And now that I'm in Chicago, he's in Mexico. Unfortunately, I only see him twice a year, if that. But I actually am going to Mexico next week. So I'm excited to, again, revisit this conversation of like, hey, Dad, you're getting older. What's the plan? Because last conversation, I told him, you have to downsize. He has a two-story house for just him. It's 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms. And I'm like, you do not need all this space. Start downsizing, sell the house, move somewhere smaller so that you can pocket those savings, right? And use them for yourself in retirement. So yeah, just kind of keeping the conversation going, encouraging him. Luckily he's very frugal. So he's not like a big spender on things, but I know he's going to need that extra cash for those upcoming medical expenses as one gets older.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you are actively having the conversation. And I love that you are also creating your own plan of what you are able to do to support your dad as he gets older. So for someone who's listening to this and they're kind of in a similar situation where they have aging parents and they know they're going to have to support their parents, but they can't fully take on the full financial support and their parents need to start preparing on their own. How would you, I guess, what tips would you give them to approach the conversation? Because a lot of times it can be, or for many people, it can be intimidating to shift the dynamic of parent-child, right? Because your parents are used to telling you and giving you the advice and telling you what to do. And now you are becoming, it's flipping and you're telling them what to do and you don't want to offend or have them feel insulted. And, you know, like, so how did you begin the conversation with your dad where he was able to listen? Or here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's especially difficult in the Latino community, especially because the patriarchy, machismo is very alive. So yeah. So for a younger daughter to be starting these conversations with the man of the house is very much like, oh, you know, so it took a while. And the way I opened it up was like, by, hey, I'm learning about how money works. I'm reading a bunch of books and can we talk about money? So now I tell my readers, like, blame me. Tell them that you're reading my book, that you're learning a lot. And you're like, oh, like, let's talk about this, right? We never talk about this. So like, what's the plan, right? And I actually do have a free guide that I would love your listeners to take advantage of. It's called How to Talk to Your Parents About Retirement Drama-Free y con Cariño. Con Cariño means with love, because we want to have these conversations, but we also don't want to cause arguments or, you know, get our families responsive. Like, you're being disrespectful. Why are you asking about my personal business? I'm asking you because I love you and because it's going to affect me as you age. So the sooner that we're proactive about what the plan is, the easier it'll be for everybody, right? So that's how I encourage them to start those conversations once. And again, it might take some time, especially if you come from a Latino family like me, it might take some time until they're willing to open up to you about what their finances look like, meaning do they have any debt? Do they have any savings? What is their plan for retirement, right? Mm-hmm. And then once they are open to having those discussions, retirement should be a top priority, right? Because there's no loans for retirement. And you want to make sure that after working so hard their whole lives, they have a dignified retirement that also won't be, you know, let's say too much of a burden for you, right? Where it's going to cause you to go into debt or anything like that. So I always encourage my community to look into the Social Security calculator to calculate what their payout would be, because that's really sobering. When your parents see, oh, this is all I'm getting, because a lot of them think they're going to get a lot more than they are. And when they see that's all you're getting, they're like, that's not going to be enough to pay my expenses. Okay. So there's a gap. So how are we going to fill that gap? Can we get you on a plan to cut expenses now and start putting money towards investing? I'll do some saving of my own on the side to help you for those future costs. But again, it needs to be together as a family, because what happened to my grandparents, those discussions were never had with my aunts and uncles. And my grandparents just retired and they didn't have any money to retire. They just had a retire because they could no longer work. So my 5 aunts and uncles had to scramble to every month. They still have to scramble to put together the money so that my grandparents have the home aid that they need, because they both are disabled, the medical care that they need, the money for groceries, all these life essentials. Mm-hmm. And again, had they been more proactive and talked about it openly, I think my grandparents would be in a much better financial situation right now.
Yeah, it's definitely sobering, and it's definitely worth having the conversation. Sometimes there might be resistance, but it's, you know, approaching it bit by bit. Like you said, tell them you're learning about personal finance. And you don't even have to give them the advice. You can be like, you know what, I just read this book, Cultura and Cash. Do you want to check it out? Here's a copy for you, and give it to them as well. And I love that you mentioned that resource. I'm assuming that folks can find it on your website, which we'll link in the show notes, right? firstgenmentor.com.
Yeah.
Okay, the firstgenmentor.com. So we'll have the link in the show notes to that. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think it's really important. It's a conversation that we, you know, we all need to have. I've had these conversations with my parents before. My dad is fortunate in the sense that he gets a pension.
Thank goodness.
And my mom, she gets a social security check here and it's like $700. And she's like, this is such a joke. She's but she's also put herself in a position where, you know, she's okay and she can take care of herself, you know. So, but it's just interesting that, you know, my mom was like $700. Like, this can't even pay rent. This can't even, like, you can buy groceries, maybe. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, she finds it funny because she's in a position where she's okay. But for some other people, it is not funny because this is what it is, $700. And then it's reaching out to different friends, trying to get support. And, you know, the last thing you want if you're in the U.S. is for the government or the state to define how you are going to retire.
Oh my goodness, wind
up in a state-funded retirement home to wind, like, you don't want this for yourself. If you don't want this for your parents. If you're listening to this, this is the opportunity to have the conversation for your parents. Start getting your own finances in order. And that's where I'm going to shift gears there because I want to talk about how you... You know, because since your audience are you focus on first gen Latinas, I want to know how you tailor the advice that you give to resonate to other Latinas and other women and men even that are in the situation where they know they're going to have to take care of parents, they know they're going to have to take care of family members, their first generation, everything in their families. How are you teaching them things like emergency funds, credit building, budgeting, debt, investing? In addition to their current scenario, current perspective of, oh my God, I have all these burden, all this burden to manage. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't call family a burden, but the expense is the burden.
Expectations.
Expectations. How are you, how do you advise them? How do you teach them?
Yeah. So in the book, the way that I laid it out was by offering my first Gen 5. So it's my framework where I had to come up with, I'm like, how am I going to teach money in an impactful way to my ideal reader, a first-gen Latina, the daughter of immigrants? And honestly, this book is also helpful to other first-generation professionals. Obviously, Latinos will get the most value from it because there's a lot of Spanglish sprinkled throughout the book. But if you're Filipino-American and you're first-gen or Nigerian-American and you're first-gen, you will still find a lot of value from the book because I decided to focus on those five pillars, like you mentioned, building savings, aka emergency funds, learning how to budget and have a plan for your money, learning how to be aggressive with your debt to pay it off and enjoy all the benefits that come from debt, being debt-free, learning how to build your credit score so that it's there when you need it, as well as investing for the long-term, primarily retirement. So each of these five pillars of the first Gen 5, I teach the basics of, like, what is credit building? What is a budget and how do you start one? But at the end of every chapter, I also include how those things can be implemented with family in mind. So for example, when I walked you through the emergency funds chapter and explained the importance of you having your own emergency fund, then I say, okay, well, what happens when your family needs help for an emergency? And the solution that I offer is start thinking about creating a second emergency fund, this one that's specifically for family needs, right? Yours should be priority because if you get laid off or if you have some medical issue and you can't work, and if your parents are broke, there's nobody to bail you out. So you have to take care of yourself first, but then also make some progress on building an emergency fund for family. Or for example, in the credit building chapter, I explain how it's very common for my reader, my community to be again requested for, hey, let me borrow your credit. You're the one with the good credit. Can I use it? Cause I need this. I need that. I need, the right.
Car, yeah.
I need a car. I need a house. Help me co-sign for this house. Yeah. Help me pay for this surgery. So whatever the roof caved in, we need to pay X amount and we don't have it. Can we charge it on your credit card? Right. So just helping my reader understand the consequences of what could go wrong, right? If that person doesn't pay back in full, and assuming that that credit, that that is now yours, right? So it's very, I mean, I've had a friend ask me to co-sign for a car for them because he's like, hey, my credit score's in the dumps. My dad won't co-sign for me. I know that you have good credit. Can you co-sign for me? And I said, Gabriel, if your own dad won't co-sign for you, what makes you think I will? I love you. You're a dear friend of mine.
You can speak the truth to him just like that.
Yeah. I mean, we're very close. We've been high school friends. So we've been friends for 20 years. Yeah. So obviously it depends on your dynamic with your friend or your relative on how those conversations are going to be had. I could keep it very real with him and he understood and he didn't make me feel bad. Right. But sometimes I found that with family, they do guilt you and they do shame you for like, hey, you should help me because I'm your elder. Right. So those conversations are a little bit more difficult to have because culturally we're instilled that family is important and that we need our family's approval. But my argument in this book is that we are bicultural Latinas, which means that we are, like for me, I am Mexican and I'm American. So I'm not just going to abide by the Mexican money values. I'm not just going to abide by the American money values. I'm going to find a blend of both that works for me, my finances, and my own core values.
I love that. And, you know, I love the fact that you said when you are focusing on your emergency savings, open a separate one for family situations because you know it's inevitable that, especially if you're first gen, someone from your family is going to need help and real help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's many situations where you can say, no. People are asking for money for nonsense or they're telling you lies to get money or they know you're easy to get money from because you've given them in the past. You can say no to those. You're paying your debt, you're paying your bills, but there will come a time where there is somebody, a parent, typically a parent or a sibling that you absolutely have to help, that you feel like you want to help, right? So having that emergency fund to cover them is great. I love that you said that. And also just being honest and saying your no, like the way you told your friend no, like if your dad can't co-sign for you, you know, and I've been in situations where in the past I've helped family members do stuff, aunts and uncles. And there was a time where it just became, oh yeah, let's go ask Paula. And I had to send out a public announcement and I was like, nobody ever asked me again. Yes, I sent a public announcement out to
like
my
on WhatsApp
family.
Or how?
Like a text message, phone call, told my mom. My mom is also a public announcement part two. Nobody ever asked me again because I'm never, ever doing it again. Ever, never, ever, ever, never.
Yeah.
Don't bring the conversation to me. Don't text me. Don't call me about it. I ain't going to do it.
Yeah. And honestly, my family on my mom's side has backed off because they just know that I have my own
get
money
used
values.
To it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they know that I march to the beat of my own drum and I'm not going to be pressured by anybody, even if it is family, to do something that I don't willingly want to do. My father, he's only approached me when he absolutely needs it. So my dad, if he's asking, I know because he really, really needs it. And I know that he's exhausted all other efforts and it doesn't happen that often. But yeah, so for somebody like my dad that I know that he really has tried and for him it's embarrassing to have to ask me, I will find a way to get a solution for him. But I completely agree. And good for you for just kind of being public about it. And you know what I do now? I give money freely when I want, now that I have the ability to. So when I see my grandmother next week, I think I'm visiting her the week after and I'll be in Mexico, I'm going to gift her $1,000, like just because I have the money. Yes. Yeah, just because I love her. She raised me. I have the money and I want to. And that just feels so much better than when she used to twist my arm and tell me, well, you owe me this because I raised you. So give me a monthly allowance. Yeah.
The first no is always the hardest. The second no will be hard. The third no will be hard. But then they'll get used to, you know what? Gigi's just going to, no, she's just, she doesn't even bother. She's going to say no. Gigi always says no. Even if we ask, let's just ask her, but we're going to expect to know.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to be comfortable being the black sheep. Cause like I said, I was labeled as the black sheep, but I call myself a cycle breaker because you know what? Because I've been able to implement these boundaries when needed, I am financially secure. I do have some sort of financial freedom where they're all still living paycheck to paycheck because they refuse to change their money habits. Mm-hmm. Right. And instead of learning from me, they criticize the way that I've made financial choices. But again, when something comes up, guess who they're calling up? Yep.
The cycle breaker. I love that term.
Yeah.
So one of the things you talk about in your book is mindset, right? And you talk about how, especially first gen, a lot of times because nothing is handed to you when you're the first to do something. You're the first to, you know, everything is a little harder because you also have this whole, this other people that you're supporting, other people that you're guiding, even if you're not just supporting them financially, you have to explain what it is you're doing. You have to help them get ahead. You know, I know lots of first gen people, even me, I help my mom do things like, you know, make appointments,
like your taxes,
taxes, explain things, how things work and things like that. But a lot of times people in situations like this tend to think that, you know, they look at money as a limitation when they don't have enough. So how do you, or how are you empowering the people who are reading this in your book, or just in general, in your teachings, to shift away from money as a limited resource and look at money as a tool for empowerment?
Yeah. Great question. So my book, I was very intentional in how I presented the information. Instead of going straight into the ABCs of how to build credit, how to start a budget, I really wanted my reader to understand that the first gen money experience is very different. And the reason for that is because when I graduated from college, I got this false sense of security. I thought that because I had achieved, you know, a college degree, which is something my parents hadn't, that I was now on a level playing field with others. And what I quickly realized was I was not, that my starting line was very different. I was actually starting life in the negative. Again, I had $50,000 in debt between my student loans and my car payment, while others got the benefit of having their parents pay for their deposit for their first apartment, or they helped them furnish their first apartment, or they helped them live rent-free at their home so that they could save their salary for 2 years and be able to go out into the real world with a nice savings account, right? So I didn't have any of that support. And on top of that, I was expected to, again, provide financial support to family, even though I was barely scraping by myself. So the way that I exposed this to my reader, to let them know that, hey, you know, the reason money feels scarce and that it's not abundant is because that's what you experienced in an immigrant household, right? If you were a low income, first generation kid like myself, there wasn't a lot to go around. I'm thankful that I did not experience any sort of food scarcity or being unhoused, but a lot of my readers have, you know, so it's important that they acknowledge that their experience is different due to their parents' immigration status. And the immigrant lifestyle is very hard, right? They come to this country with no connections, no resources, learning a new language. They're far away from family, trying to start a new life from nothing. So it's a very hard, the immigrant life is a very hard life. And now the baton's passed on to us, right? To get that college education and to make more money than our immigrant parents ever have. But we have to learn how to manage this new money. It's essentially new money, right? So I exposed the differences in our different starting line by using three characters. I called the first archetype Privileged Patty, the second one Average Amy, and then the third one First Gen Gina. So I walked the reader through the experiences of those three characters from childhood all the way to life post-college, and how that privileged Patty was given an allowance and was taught that, you know, you should save part of your allowance. And when they were teenagers, their parents opened up a checking account for them and explained what that was and helped them with the custodial Roth IRA, right? And then obviously the Average Amy's like in the middle. But yeah, the first gen Gina experience is very different, where again, we don't get any of that guidance and we go into the world knowing nothing, but just thinking that this college degree is going to solve all our problems, when really it's just a ticket, like the entrance ticket to the race, you know?
Yep, that's true. Yeah. And it's so important, right? Seeing illustrations like that helps you put it in perspective. Like, okay, this is a potential outcome here, potential outcome here, potential outcome here. And you can see that, okay, I have different paths I can choose, and I can adjust my mindset accordingly. And I'm not trying to minimize in any way adjusting your mindset, because that is hard. Listen, I'm adjusting my mindset every single day for what I have to do, for what I'm trying to achieve as a business owner, as a mom, as all of that. You're constantly trying to maintain this mindset and stay focused and stay a positive and maintain abundance in your mind. And situations happen that make you realize that, oh my God, what is this like? Can this even be possible for me, right? So I love how you explained it, and just it's really important for people to just put things into perspective for themselves. And
yeah, I'd love to add that the feedback I've gotten from my readers, they thank me for that first chapter. It's called The Different Starting Line, because they say, I've always felt behind. I just didn't know why. And now that you kind of, walk me through the different experiences of the different levels of privilege that people get in the sense of generational wealth or generational knowledge, no wonder I'm behind, you know, So it's not my fault. It's not my parents' fault either, right? They were the brave immigrants that left everything to come here to give us opportunity for a better life. But now that I know that, now that I'm aware of where I truly stand, now I want to use this knowledge to improve my financial situation. And I acknowledge that our road is tougher because, again, we started late to the race, but we can catch up. But that means, again, changing your mindset, knowing that generational wealth is possible, debt freedom is possible, but you have to make intentional money choices. And sometimes that does mean saying no to family.
Yeah, I love that. Generational wealth is so possible. And it's, you know, it's not as outlandish as a lot of content and media tries to make it seem. You can build generational wealth. You can transition generational knowledge to your children. And that in itself is even more powerful, to be able to teach your children the value of a dollar. Because, you know, if your parents, Gigi, gave you $1 million, imagine that it was, they didn't have to, you didn't have to support them, your parents well off, and they gave you $1 million, mm-hmm. but you had no good financial foundations, you would spend all that money. It's easy. It's so easy to spend $1 million. It's so easy to spend $100 million if you want to, right? And so when you think about now that you are, you've learned all this stuff that your parents didn't know, you're in this position where you're living in America, you have the opportunity to earn all this money, your parents didn't have that. You can now transition just even that knowledge to your children is a huge game changer in their lives. So being able to transition generational wealth and generational knowledge is so possible and even necessary as far as I'm concerned. I want to transition both of those things to my children. I want to put them in a better position, especially as children of color. It's not even as much as people like to say it is. I had someone tell me that, well, you know, if your child goes to Harvard, they're going to be the same as everybody else. And I had to tell her, no, actually they won't, because guess what? They're still going to be Black in America. Mm-hmm. So let's be clear.
Yeah.
Clear on that. But yeah, I love how you broke that down. And so, Gigi, thank you so much for sharing. I would love for you to share any final piece of advice to anyone listening who is trying to take care of their finances, trying to get their finances in order, but they're also, you know, considering their family's well-being, whether it's siblings, whether it's parents. What advice would you give this person who is in the throes of paying off debt, building their emergency savings, but also helping their family out?
Yeah, I love this question. I remember when I started my money journey and I learned all the things that I had to implement to get into a better financial standing, like prioritize paying off debt, starting to build savings, being more aggressive with my retirement contributions because I was putting the bare minimum to get the match. I felt overwhelmed by like, oh my goodness, I have to do all this. But, you know, I love the phrase of how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? So just be patient with yourself. This is not going to happen overnight. The same way that like you can't expect to get abs from, you know, doing sit-ups one time at the gym and the next day you're going to have that doesn't happen, right? You're going to have to consistently show up at the gym, be consistent with your nutrition. It's going to take time and intentionality. And please, please, please create financial goals for yourself, right? Like think about your why, because your why is what's going to keep you anchored when the going gets tough. You know, if you're just like doing it because, well, I'm supposed to have a good credit score, I'm supposed to pay off my debt. No, like allow yourself to dream about what life will look like once you've achieved debt freedom, once you have the savings to be able to leave places that no longer serve you, you know, not like me, like I was stuck in these bad workplace situations, bad roommate situations. Like think of the flexibility, the freedom, the options that you'll have, and use that to fuel you as you continue your financial literacy journey.
I love that advice. And then I ask everybody this question, what is your clever girl superpower?
Yeah. My clever girl superpower is being able to keep it real. It's funny.
Yes, like you did for Gabriel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My whole life as a little girl, I got in trouble for keeping it real. My teachers would kick me out of class. They send me to detention. Yeah. But now as a content creator and Latina leader, it's very much what sets me apart. And it's It's why I have the community that I have, because they know I'm not a sellout. They know I'm going to speak the truth and according to my values and how I feel. And sometimes people are like, I don't agree with you and I'm leaving. And I say, that's fine. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. Yeah. Yeah. Where I see some people that they ask you, they're like, how is it that you are so raw? How is it that you just bear so much? And I say, girl, I was born this way. This is my whole life. So I can't teach you. I'm a Leo. I think that helps too. So, but yeah, like I said, my whole life as a little girl, I was, you know, it was suppressed. And I wish that it would have been something that teachers would have let me explore more of, right? Because I have an opinion, people like my opinions, and I should be allowed to share it and inspire other women with these opinions.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And then finally, last question, please tell everybody where they can find you, where they can pick up your book, remind us of the name of your book again, how they can keep in touch.
Thanks, Bola. I really appreciate that. And thanks again for having me on the show. My book is called Cultura and Cash, Lessons from the First Gen Mentor for Managing Finances and Cultural Expectations. It's available on all major online retailers like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org. Although I highly encourage you, if you are able to support your local bookstore and order it from them. And you can learn all about my book at culturaandcash.com. There is actually a link where you can download the full introduction chapter via PDF or an audio file to check it out first to see if it's your cup of tea before deciding to buy.
I love that. And we'll have that website link in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for coming on to share, Gigi.
Thank you, Bola. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you've loved the episode, but you don't yet subscribe to the podcast, you can do that everywhere you listen to your podcast episodes. And head on over to iTunes and leave a review so other amazing women just like you can find this podcast as well. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll talk to you on the next episode.